But ultimately, you know, ChatGPT and language models are not a knowledge base. They are a tool that can be instructed to do very specific things in the same way that a human would do.
Welcome back, gang. This is Future Proof, episode number 206, I believe we're up to. I'm your host, Bill Sheridan. Glad to be here. Glad that you're here. Hope all is well with you. And yeah, thanks for asking. Everything here is great too. Couldn't be better, in fact. We got another great show for you this week. Going to get to that in just a second. But first, a reminder, this week's show made possible by our preferred providers. And these are the folks that we actually like to think of as partners. These are the organizations, the relationships, the partnerships that allow us, the MACPA, to do a lot of the great stuff that we do for our profession, including this podcast. But these partners, they do way more than that, right? They're doing things that we believe can help y'all become more future ready and thrive in this ever-changing world. And help really is the key word here. They truly do want to help. So let them, okay? Reach out to them, find out more about what they can do for you and how they can help you. You'll find out more about all of our preferred providers on our website. That's macpa.org. So this week's show, we've had some great conversations recently about AI and what it means for our profession. Where this technology is going, what it can do well, why we as CPAs should be paying attention, first steps at getting good at it, all of that stuff. We've got another one of those conversations for you today, this time with a gentleman named Jason Statz. If you're an accountant who's into AI and new technologies, you probably know the name. Jason has been he's been playing on the bleeding edges of AI for a while now. Probably knows more, or knows it better, I guess, than most CPAs that I know. He's been a big draw on the speaking circuit lately. In fact, that's where I ran into him recently. His messaging about AI, which I love, is that as new and groundbreaking and game-changing as AI is, it doesn't necessarily mean that our profession is going to change radically as a result, at least not when it comes to the foundational stuff, which can be a reassuring thing. I mean, you know, the thing about AI is that it's a tool, right? It allows us to do a lot of really interesting and important things, but all in the service of what our profession is charged to do. Here's an example, right? It comes from an article from the folks at CPA Australia. That article is called Generative AI in Business, How to Navigate the Ethics. And that's a timely topic as well. We haven't spent much time here talking about the ethics of AI, but it's a conversation that's going to become more and more critical, I think, as time marches on. And here's what the author says. Her name, by the way, is Susan Muldowney. And back to the notion of the more things change, the more they stay the same. Here's what Muldowney says. She writes, quote, "Our codes of ethics require accountants to be independent of mind in order to act with integrity and to exercise objectivity and professional skepticism. Quote, if someone who's performing an audit has ethical concerns about the information that AI is giving them, whether that's around bias or accuracy or whatever it may be, they have a responsibility to raise their concerns," says Anju Diawe. I think I'm pronouncing that right, Always. Anju is managing director of the Ultimate Access Education Institute. And Dr. Simon Longstaff, who's executive director of the Ethics Center, he adds that the results produced by generative AI tools should also be, quote, able to be tested against analog judgment in the real world. Quote, this is not different to what accountants have always done, particularly in the audit profession. He says companies are constantly producing accounts, which they claim to be a true and fair representation of the state of the company's financial affairs, only for it to be discovered through the independent review of auditors that perhaps it's not true. If you've got an expert system like AI producing findings that are supposed to describe the world, well, a good accountant would go into the world and say, does it look right? is there any evidence beyond what the system has produced that to validate that, right? These are bread and butter things to do for a profession that is oriented toward things being true, Longstaff says. That's a core skill to bring to bear. And another opinion here, Matt Cooperholtz, who's a data scientist at Deakin University, says companies should ensure that AI systems have an appropriate level of explainability, transparency, and replicability. Now, that's a hard one to say three times. Will these models break when they're presented with new data that they haven't seen before? Are they secure? Is there the ability for a nefarious actor to capture sensitive, intellectual, or even worse, customer information? Cooperholtz asks. There's another set of performance monitoring around safety and control, he adds. These are challenging things to monitor, but not at all impossible. And DeAlwis adds that accountants should consider the broader technology ecosystem while using AI tools. Quote, who's feeding the data into these systems and can we trust the data? She asks. Management accounting is all about insights for the future, and that's where AI will get really interesting. But we need to constantly think of the veracity of the data. That's where professional skepticism comes in. We need to question the insights that we're getting from technology, end quote. And again, that's from a CPA Australia article titled Generative AI in Business, How to Navigate the Ethics. In other words, CPAs, do what we're trained to do. That part's not going to change. What we do need to do is ramp up our curiosity about these new tools, become curious about what they will allow us to do, and how they will allow us to better serve our clients and customers. And this is where we need to get specific. It would be a mistake, I think, to rush into this and say, we need to be using AI to do everything right now, right? A better approach, I think, and one that my guest this week, Jason Statz, says is a better approach as well, is really the same one we should take with any new endeavor. And it starts by asking, what problem are we trying to solve? And how, if at all, can AI help? Kind of reminds me of the conversations we were having about social media like 15 years or so ago, right? Everyone was jumping out of their skin about, we got to do social media. And after the initial hype wore off, you realize the goal wasn't to do social media. It was, to be more social. And how we do that in a way that will help our clients and customers, that was the big question, right? The big problem we were trying to solve for. Same with AI. The goal here isn't to do it for the sake of doing it. It's to understand what problems we're trying to solve for and how AI can help us do that. So that's a conversation we kind of have to have with ourselves before we dive fully in, right? And so that's kind of the gist of this week's conversation with Jason Statz. And you'll hear it here in just a second, but Jason has two pieces of advice, I think, that just resonate with me over and over again. Number one, be curious, right? Cultivate a culture of curiosity because that will help protect your organization from change. And number two, be useful. If you start with those two pieces of advice in anything you do, your work and learning how to use AI gets a whole lot easier. Be curious, be useful, great places to start anywhere, but especially when we're talking about AI. Really great talk this week, taking the conversation about artificial intelligence just another step further. Here is my chat with Jason Statz. Jason, thanks for being here. We've been hyping AI up in a really big way now for gosh, more than a year. And I guess my question is it possible that we've been underselling it? That it might have even a bigger impact than any of us have imagined. I guess my question for you is really, what do you think? How big of a deal is AI really?
Well, that's a $1 million question. In the midterm, it's I think most folks who are plugged into it would agree it's massive. The more I have learned about it and the more I've gotten into the weeds, and now I do a lot of advising with software companies and get into kind of more the technical nitty gritty, the more I've learned about it, the more convinced I am that it's a fundamental, some people call it a civilization altering technology. Right now we're getting the stuff that will feel like child's play relative to, you know, the big unlock, and we're kind of jumping ahead in some ways, but agents, ultimately, if you've heard that word thrown around, agents mm-hmm. are, you know, these bots that will autonomously go out, and they're capable of using the apps that we use, clicking around on buttons and stuff like that. And they're here now, and they're getting better really fast. And you take something as simple as, maybe simple is not the right word, but you look at something like reconciling a bank statement in QuickBooks Online. You know, we're getting these agents now that are purpose-built for specific tasks. And as soon as they're good enough to do these things, these common things that we all do, and we reach this tipping point, it changes a lot. Mm-hmm. So I think there's been some frustration of, you know, we all hear the hype and the news cycle and all that stuff. And you're like, you know, my email inbox is still on fire. I would love all the help that I can get. When is it coming? Yes. So maybe in the super short term, it is, you know, overhyped, but in the medium term, I would argue it's probably underhyped.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, and you know, I keep hearing, or reading news reports about, you know, AI and accounting, and accounting being one of the things that AI doesn't do so well. Is that going to change? Is it changing? I mean, that's the deal with artificial intelligence, right? Is it just gets smarter the more that it does things? I mean, what are you noticing about this technology and its potential within our profession?
Yeah, accounting is a collection of a really diverse set of tasks. And there's a lot of quote unquote accountants that do very different things. So it's hard to generalize. Ultimately, you know, is accounting going to be disrupted? At the end of the day, probably everything's going to be disrupted in some form or another. Yeah. The thing that I think folks clung to early on was LLMs aren't any good at math. And they're probably a long ways off from being any good at math, but computers kind of solved for that one a while ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, the solution isn't to throw out every other piece of tech and every tool we've ever had and just use language models. The solution is to pair the best of what language models do with calculators, you know, like stuff that computers can already handle just fine. Mm-hmm. That's where the more specific applications of AI to preparing a tax return or doing a month-end close. That's where the more specific applications are much more helpful. I'm probably not going to go out to ChatGPT to run a full ledger, but if it will help me do quality assurance, if it will help me draft an executive summary, if it'll help me identify outliers and that sort of thing, it can be this sort of dream assistant that is supporting me throughout that process. So I think the ultimate solution is the pairing of what language models do best with what computers traditionally have done well.
Are you seeing it do some of those things that you just mentioned already? Are we getting to that point?
Yeah. So the GPT-4 specifically, and so this is the newest, the frontier model, the best language model out there, is very good at following specific instructions. And we are still coming to terms with what it means to work with language models and AI assistants and all of that. But you'll notice that many of the blockers we run into are the same blockers that we run into when we work with other human beings. So for example, I go out and hire an intern and I say, I want you to go research this tax thing. If that intern just comes back and says, this is the answer, I'm going to be like, yeah, show me the work paper. I'm not going to, you know, blindly trust you. And so I need to tell them how I want them to go do the research and how I want them to, you know, give me the results in a helpful way to ultimately prove to me that this is the answer in a way that we can document. When we first hopped into ChatGPT, what most of us did was two types of people. One type of person typed their name in first. The other type, and it's weird, that's like just part of the human condition. The other type of person typed in the most nuanced, hard technical thing that you're proud of yourself for knowing, just to go, well, surely it doesn't know this.
Right.
And in some cases it does, in some cases it doesn't. But ultimately, you know, ChatGPT and language models are not a knowledge base. They are a tool that can be instructed to do very specific things in the same way that a human would do. So for example, using the research example, I can say, use this authoritative literature, go out and grab this and pull for me the 10 most relevant excerpts to my question and build it into a work paper and a docx file that I can then go save to my file system. That's more or less, you know, if you get really explicit, how do you would instruct a person to do some research for you? And so I think what folks are getting around to now is ultimately the usefulness of them comes down to how well we can instruct them to do exactly what we want to do to kind of codify our expertise. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing that we struggle with when it comes to delegating work, when it comes to being frustrated that maybe a colleague wasn't able to read your mind and do exactly what you wanted them to do for you, right?
Right.
So we are working through that. And there's definitely some shared tooling that we could all use so that we're not all recreating the wheel. But yeah, the ultimately where things are at today, and it will just get better, is it's pretty darn good at following those explicit instructions.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I this may apply to what you just said, but I heard you speak at a conference recently, and a couple themes seemed to surface more than once during your session. One was this idea of curiosity, which I think is hugely underrated, really, as a future-ready skill. But you said, I think the quote you used was, a culture of curiosity protects you from change. So I guess I want to start there. What did you mean by that?
Well, we're all going to change in one way or another. You know, what the tasks we do day to day will continue to evolve as they always have. The only thing you don't want to be is surprised by change. That's the only situation where this really goes sideways, is when the change takes you by surprise. Mm-hmm. One of the tricky things with where AI is at right now is the really useful applications for most folks are fairly nuanced. They are like personal productivity problems, where it's a problem that you have and it could save you a bunch of time. But the ways in which we use it are very different. There's not like a huge, you know, killer use case that where everybody has that pain point where we can say, yeah, like this is how we can all use it. It's very personalized the way that most people use it. Mm-hmm. So like ultimately how you plug that into your day to day, it's going to look a bit different person to person. And each day you may stumble into an interesting use case. And unless organizationally you've developed a culture of encouraging transparency around the things that you're learning and leaving space for folks to explore a bit, then you don't, I guess, get the upside of being exposed to what everybody else is learning along the way, right? If I've got 10 other colleagues and I can 10x the things that I'm exposed to when they stumble into these helpful use cases, I want to do that. And a lot of that's born from traditional accounting firm culture being very, you know, utilization focused and not leaving a lot of space for exploration, or carving out a team and saying it's this dedicated team's job. Right. And the trap there with AI, I mean, this is like bringing computers into the office for the first time and saying, okay, these people are going to use the computers for us. And the rest of us are going to keep doing what we were doing before. So that can kind of be a trap too. But it encourages, I think, a different level of transparency. Leadership needs to be visible in their, you know, highlighting and praise of folks who are finding cool new use cases and sharing that. Because that's just a fundamentally better way to figure all this stuff out than to just do it yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And all that seems, I don't know, this idea of curiosity, and you alluded to it from a firm perspective, seems a little squishy from a skills perspective, right? Like, how do you promote something like curiosity among your team in that type of environment?
It probably starts with more explicit feedback loops to collect ideas. So I heard from a firm recently who every month they award like a prompt of the month, and they have, you know, a place, be it a Teams channel or a forum or anything, where people can, you know, if they had a good experience with ChatGPT or whatever it is they're using, they share that there. And every month they highlight, you know, kind of their favorite and a couple of runner-ups.
That's cool.
And it's just, I mean, it's kind of just the gamified way of bringing attention to these things. But along the way, people are picking up ideas from others, and you're just kind of instilling in the culture of your firm, like, let's get excited about this and let's experiment a bit. And when we do have wins, let's share those wins.
Yeah, that's a really cool idea. Just getting creative on how you get people to think a little bit differently and ask better questions. Well, another thing that came up during your talk multiple times, you said this a few times during your session, was this idea of being useful, focusing on what you can control and being useful. What does being useful look like to you in relation to the use of AI?
I think the overwhelm that comes from all this is when we look out into the future, 12 months or 36 months or 10 years, you're like, well, what in the world does all this mean for what I'm going to be doing a decade from now? Ultimately, it doesn't matter. I got no idea. There's a whole lot of people smarter than you and I that can't seem to agree on what all that will look like.
No doubt.
So I try to stay razor focused on just being useful a day at a time. Yes. Today, my clients still super need me. Today, there's probably still stuff I have to learn on how to be more efficient. Again, you just don't want to be surprised. So I need to make sure that I am tapped into, like, what are the places that are doing AI education and keeping you up to speed? Like, I need to at least give some attention to those groups to ensure that I'm keeping up to speed. But when you get too, far out, like the planning horizon has gotten way shorter in the last 36 months. Like, you used to, you know, especially big firms, you may have a 7 to 10 year plan for how you're doing tech stuff. You can throw all that out the window. I mean, all of our software vendors in the last 24 months have completely abandoned their roadmaps and are now working on something completely different. Mm-hmm. We're going to get a new model probably from OpenAI this year. That's the release of that next model could immediately impact huge swaths of industries. We honestly have no idea, or it may not. Right. So we're just operating on kind of a different time horizon. Is it, you know, can you really see a future where all the headaches related to compliance and accounting around entrepreneurship just poof go away or are totally solved? Like, no, probably not. We're still going to have politicians. We're still going to have a whole lot of things. Like, I have a hard time thinking that this just goes away, but it's easy to get overwhelmed. And so I kind of just try to pull it back to over a shorter time horizon. How can I be as helpful as I can?
And to that point, I mean, what have you been seeing in terms of like practical applications, things that people can do with these tools that are useful, you know, today? What kind of cool examples have you come across?
So many, and so many of them are so personalized too. It's hard to generalize stuff that's going to be useful for everybody. I mean, a slam dunk that everybody needs to be leaning into is AI meeting assistants and having transcripts of your client meetings for those to be searchable and discoverable. I imagine right now, if you had transcripts of the last decade of client meetings that you've had, to be able to search for that, to be able to say, did we talk about that rental property or this or that? Or did they bring this thing up about their kid a couple of years ago? That would be so valuable. Start capturing that stuff now because it is really helpful. And the transcript, the automated transcripts are just really good now. But I mean, it's stuff as utilitarian as extracting, you know, transaction CSVs from a bank statement. We did a YouTube video recently around building an HR assistant within your firm where you upload the employee manual, you know, any other peripheral like organizational docs, even transcripts from internal meetings where you may outline some policies there. In that video, we had basically 40 plus pages worth of stuff. And I inserted into there a single sentence that said, if anybody leaves their lunch in the break room fridge for over a week, it's fair game for anyone. And then I asked the assistant, Mark, you know, left his, I've been looking at Mark's pizza in the fridge for the last week or something like that. And I ate it and now he's been out of shape. And the assistant fetches. It doesn't give me an answer. It fetches from the authoritative source. Here is the source from the handbook. It says this, and so it looks like you're in the clear. You know, stuff as basic as that, which takes less than 5 minutes to set up now. So many little things. This is, you know, one of the things that I try to put a lot of content out on is just every day trying to give people fresh ideas for different applications, because it genuinely can impact pretty much all areas from our work. All areas of our work, from how we respond to emails, to quality assurance, to the way that we give feedback to our colleagues. Like it's I don't know that killer use cases are the best place to start, or if the biggest pain points in your work are the best way to start, because it is so malleable to what do you need? Well, how explicitly can you instruct it? And that's a good place to start to see if it can help you out.
Just like what am I trying to solve for today, basically?
And yeah,
and just going from there. Somehow every conversation circles back to a conversation about talent. At least this one is going to here in a second. So it's on everybody's mind these days. And so I'm curious what you think about what employers in this profession, in this new environment, you know, what kind of skills or characteristics should they be looking for in new hires? Is the environment for recruiting and retaining talent different now because of these new technologies?
I don't think we've seen it yet. I don't think we've seen a big shift there. You know, most accounting firms are change management blocked. Mm-hmm. And no amount of sweet new AI tech is going to make you not change management blocked. I mean, if all the tools get better overnight, you're still going to be blocked by the same thing.
Right.
So more than ever before, I mean, a big thing to look out for when you are hiring is, you know, ultimately does change suck the energy and the life out of these people, or are they energized by it? I know a lot of us are in firms where that is just hard and you're surrounded by people who do not have energy for change. Honestly, on those teams, all it takes is one person coming in who can really motivate everyone else and be energized by that stuff. And it makes a world of difference.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's, things are changing so fast. There's not like a concrete skill set where you can say like, oh, we need to hire somebody that's really good at this thing. I think it's more of an attitude and willingness to be curious and lean into new stuff, and sometimes put some of that on their back if their colleagues aren't going to have the same appetite for change. Those are the big things that I look for, you know, the hustlers, the folks who are willing to dig into messy stuff and figure it out.
Learn new things. I mean, that just seems to be, I mean, what we're dealing with today is going to look completely different a year.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And in any profession, there's a subset of people in that profession who enjoy it because of a specific task that they derive value from. So back in the day, that may have been keying stuff in. Honestly, it may have been keying stuff on a 10 key. It may have been the OCD kind of pleasure of classifying every transaction and putting it somewhere just so. Well, those days are behind us because we have bank rules and we have better ways of automating these classifications. And so there are people in every profession who enjoy what they do because there's a specific task that is like, it just kind of scratches an itch for them. And those are the folks that are going to have the hardest time, because ultimately it's not about the set of tasks that you do now. It's about how does this impact the overall value of what we're delivering. Everything within that can change and shift, and it will, as you know, clients get better access to, you know, automated advisory solutions, and the general tooling gets better. So the folks that are probably hardest there are the ones that are maybe really tied to that specific task, and that's where they're deriving, you know, joy and satisfaction. Yep. Those are the trickiest situations, I think.
Yeah. It certainly comes as no surprise to you. Our profession obviously has a bit of a reputation of being, you know, if not late adopters, then certainly not early adopters.
What?
Of new technology. And yeah, I mean, and sure, there's plenty of exceptions to that rule, but in general, sort of a wait and see how it works for others approach to new stuff. I mean, given how quickly things like AI are moving, do we have that luxury anymore? How quickly do we need to become early adopters of this new stuff now?
It's definitely going to stress the normal change cycle. It's interesting. Small firms look up at big firms and they say, oh, they've got all these talented people and money to put behind this. And they're really going to be the ones that win. But those are the biggest, most monolithic, hard to change organizations, who are very set in how they've gotten to their current successful state. Upsides and downsides to being big and small. I will say the big upside of being the little guy is just the agility and the freedom to experiment and all that. I'm a big community guy. The greatest thing I ever discovered in running accounting firms was I could get home from work and my wife would tell me, you're doing a great job. You're doing your best. You're so good at this stuff. And I appreciate that. But at the end of the day, I don't know that she actually knows that I am any good at this stuff. I don't know that she knows. But when I could sit down in a room of people that did exactly what I did and had a very high level understanding of all the pains I was feeling, that was so enlightening and so helpful and so energizing, because running accounting firms can be super isolating, right? Yep. As much as, you know, my wife is doing everything she can to support me, to find community and other folks who do what I do was really, really helpful. And when it comes to change management and tech adoption and all this stuff and the reality of what the day-to-day grind can look like, working through that with other human beings is not a straightforward thing. Being able to get connected with other folks who do this as well and are of the same mind, where they're trying to lean into this stuff, they're learning new things every single day. That was a huge accelerant for my learning and for the enjoyment I could take from doing all of this. Mm-hmm. So I look at who are the folks that I look up to, who are the folks that are doing this best right now, and how do I get into their network and how do we kind of do that journey together?
Yeah, that's a great way of looking at it, and maybe that's an answer to this final question, Jason. But I'm curious what your bottom line is on all of this. I mean, one thing above all else that you think CPAs need to know or do or think about where all this is going at this point. What are your thoughts?
I mean, you have so much to offer people. That's not going to change anytime soon. The way that we do the work's absolutely going to change. You just don't want to be surprised by it. So plug into the places where you can get that information. We're all sick of the general AI headlines and our news feeds. I'm a huge advocate of people getting into AI education to put all of this general stuff through the very specific lens of what it means to serve clients in public accounting. Mm-hmm. So I loved trying to encourage more people to do what I do to try to make this practical for folks. But just plug into that stuff, you know, like it doesn't mean that you're going to be on the bleeding edge of it all. You just need to be aware of what's happening. Don't sit back and just let your tech partners adopt all this. There's two sides of this. There's the tools that we all use getting better, but that's only 50% of the equation. The other side of it is a much more personal level of productivity that AI enables, and where it solves your very one-off problems that aren't going to be captured by a software platform. So just stay curious. Try to do it with other people wherever you can, because you're going to learn from what they're figuring out along the way too. And for me, like, that was how I made it sustainable too, like doing all this stuff with other people I enjoy.
Well, Jason, thanks. This has been a great conversation. I appreciate you being here. Thanks so much for your time.
You bet. Thanks for having me, Bill.
Great stuff there from Jason Statz. Jason most recently ran a $5 million accounting practice in Oregon in 2022. Now he runs a YouTube channel for accounting firm owners while producing commercials for companies like LinkedIn and Zapier. He has also created the world's most watched AI accounting content, and in 2023 launched a daily show for accountants named Jason Daily, which you can check out by visiting jasondaily.transistor.fm. Links to all of Jason's other social channels and various AI related goodies are in our show notes on our website. That's macpa.org/blog. And don't forget this week's show, made possible as always by our preferred providers, our partners in this profession. They're doing things that we believe can help you all become more future ready and thrive in this ever-changing world. And you'll find out more about all of our preferred providers on our website. That's macpa.org/showcase. And that is officially all I've got for you this week, gang. Thanks for being here again. Have a great week. And we'll talk to you again soon. Take care.